So this beautiful text called Bhakti Sudha talks about the path of love. Previously, we had talked about the path of knowledge, Gyanasar. We had talked about Manashodhanam, how to purify the mind. A mind that is purified through removal of all my negative qualities and also has the right knowledge is now ready to love God. So some people say, I don't need all that to love Him, and that's beautiful. But when you know who this God is, and when your mind is pure, free of negative qualities like anger, hatred, then there is spontaneous love not only for God, but for His whole creation. So that is what we have studied so far in this text. And we talked about how when a person loves God totally and becomes His servant, then God Himself works through him. And not only works through him to take care of the world, but also whatever the devotee needs, the Lord Himself provides. He says, I become my devotee's servant. I serve the devotee and take care of his needs. So the Lord Himself takes care of such a person. And we have found numerous examples we had talked about in detail last week. So today we shall study about what is the benefit of, why should one practice love for God? Why should one practice devotion? And in our scriptures, they talk about four paths. The path of Karma Yoga, which means service. Ashtang Yoga. Ashtang Yoga is the path of doing all those physical exercises, pranayam, breathing, and then merging your mind in meditation. And Jnana Yoga is the path of knowledge, where through knowledge I come to realize my oneness with that supreme reality and my oneness with everybody. So there are three paths, and the fourth is the path of bhakti or devotion. And what is the benefit of each, and can this one give us all the three? That's what today's verse will talk about. So those who have the book, page number 24. Verse number 14 and 15 we will do today. Karma yoga phalam shuddhihi manasas sarva sammatam citta vriddhai nirodastu phalam yogasya varnitam. And then the next one, verse number 15, we'll also do today. Brahmatmaikatva vijnanat muktim prahur manishinaha. Etsat sarvam tu bhakte praptam. Bhaktaistatodhikam. Okay, so karma yoga phalam shuddhihi manasaha. Means through karma yoga, we get purity of mind. Now, what is karma yoga? Karma yoga we have talked about before, but just to summarize, karma means action and yoga means united with the higher, united with the Lord. And karma action, many people do. You know, some people say, I don't believe in this meditation, in this prayer and all that. I'm a karma yogi. I like to work. And such people work 16 hours a day, 18 hours a day, and they say, I'm a karma yogi. But just working 16 or 18 hours a day does not make you a karma yogi. With what attitude are you working? Even a smuggler or a drug dealer works 16 or 18 hours a day, you know, and he has to work with great dedication, with great devotion. You can come to the front. With great dedication, with great devotion, he has to work. Because why? So the police should not catch him and you know, he should get the product to the customers on time. Even a bank robber, you know, he works hard I mean, to plan the robbery perfectly and to check out the bank and to, you know, check all the cameras. He works day and night. So working long hours is not karma yoga. The true meaning of karma yoga, yoga means united. So an activity which is done dedicated to the Lord. The first aspect of karma yoga is that whatever my assigned duty is, wherever I am, whether I'm a mother or a father or a businessman or a professional or a student, whatever activity I do it to the best of my ability without likes or dislikes. Whatever I have been assigned, Lord, wherever you have placed me, I'll do my best and I won't do it without likes or dislikes. Whatever duties are given to me, I do that as a service of the Lord without a sense of ego. That I am the doer. There's no ego and egocentric desires. The activities are dedicated to the Lord. They are done unselfishly without me or mine. Whatever I have been assigned, I do it to the best of my ability. And while I am working, I do my best and leave the result to the Lord. Yes, I have a goal in mind. Say I have to build a hospital or I have to establish my business or take care of my family. While I am working, I do not have the end result in mind while I'm acting. While I'm working, I'm doing my best and leave the result to the higher. Because once I have done my job, then the result will come. So while I'm working, my mind is not disturbed about, you know, last time I had done this job and I had failed. And then maybe if I don't succeed, then what will happen? So a person, when he or she is working in the world, does their best without worrying about the result and dedicates activities to the Lord unselfishly, working for the benefit of all, that is called karma yoga. Of course, karma yoga is a whole 1 hour talk, but I had to just summarize in brief because that's not our subject today. So karma yoga leads to purity of mind. When I do my best without likes and dislikes, without ego, then I have no anger, I have no pride, I have no jealousy, I have no hatred. My work is a spontaneous act of service to the Lord and there is no selfishness, there is no negativity. So my mind automatically becomes pure. When I serve the Lord, when I serve the world, then I have no eye or mind. Ashtang yoga is the yoga that we practice. You know, when you come on Tuesday night, they have the yoga class. And then they also teach you some breathing techniques. And of course, it's an 8 steps. The yoga is only one part, what they do here. But there is the purify, you know, in that there is, you have to withdraw your mind from the world. Then you sit and do the exercises. And then you do some breathing. And then you go into meditation, and having done all those things where your mind is no longer running into the world and it's centered on the self, then the thoughts cease. That leads to cessation of thoughts. And the person goes into the complete silence, where in the deep meditation there is no experiencer or experienced, and complete quietude of the mind is attained. And that technique not only gives you great quietude of the mind, but can get you great spiritual powers. That's why these yogis, you know, who are very advanced, can walk on water, can read people's mind, can predict the future, can see through walls. So those kind of powers come to such people through yoga, through practicing all the 8 limbs. Of course, it takes many years. You know, it doesn't happen just like that. But after years of practice, you do get powers and you get complete quietude of the mind. And then Jnana Yoga, which we have talked about many times, is where when the person realizes that there is one consciousness called Om or called Brahman or called God or Father in Heaven that is pervading the entire universe. The entire universe is nothing but that one Lord expressing to all names and forms, and I also am an expression of the Lord, even though at this moment I think myself to be this limited body, mind and intellect. But when the teacher tells us that you are that eternal spirit, Not only you are that eternal spirit, but everything that is expressed is that one eternal spirit manifesting through all various names and forms. When that attitude comes, then that person becomes one with that and gets liberated. Because right now, if I think myself to be this limited body, then I suffer, you know. And even if when things are not going well, I complain. When things are going well, I still complain. Why? Because I'm worried that things may not. Right now they are okay, but I don't know how it will be in the future. So you're always complaining. Somebody insults me, somebody criticizes me because I am depressed. But when I think I am the spirit functioning through this body, then I go beyond, and then I am liberated. Even tomorrow I have to drop the body. That's not me. It's just my instrument. My mind is agitated or I'm insulted. That's the mind or intellect getting, but I am the spirit. So that attitude, when you get, then you become liberated. Then you become free of worldly attachments, free of bodily functions, and you still function, but you see the oneness. That one spirit that is in me is the one spirit in all. So that attitude of oneness comes, and such a person is said to be liberated, no longer affected, no longer bound by problems of the body, the mind, or the intellect. Yeah, problems may come and he or she will deal with them, but will not be affected by them. So, all three of them require love. As we said, bhakti is the path of love. And for me to do activities dedicated to the Lord and to serve everybody, I have to have love. Otherwise, I'll only be working for myself. And when you only work for you, yourself, me and my family, then that becomes a selfish activity. So unselfish activities require love. And so love has to come in that. In the path of Ashtanga Yoga, you say, where is the love in that? Well, for me to spend years sitting in, you know, meditation and, you know, doing exercises and quietening my mind, I have to have love for that. You know, otherwise I'm not going to spend so many years of my life in trying to develop these powers, you know, of quietude of mind. In fact, talking about yoga, I had this joke I had told before, but it's so beautiful, it's worth repeating. This man had gone to learn yoga, you know, he had gone to learn the exercises, and so he spent a few months learning from this teacher, and he was very proud of his knowledge, you know, how much he has learned. So he tells his wife, you know, you need to come to those classes. So she said, well, what have you learned? He said, I learned how to do the headstand. And so right, you know, in the middle of the room, he puts his feet up and head down, headstand, and he's in perfect alignment, you know, and without any support. She said, oh, that's pretty good. You know, you learned very well. Very proud of his knowledge. And then he stands up and he said, honey, but one thing, you know, when I stand on my head, the blood rushes to my head. But when I stand on my feet, why doesn't the blood rush to my feet? So his wife says, because your feet are not empty. See, that's why we need wife to keep us firmly on the ground so we don't get ego. Anyway, so that ended his yoga right there. And similarly, to get the knowledge, one has to sit with a teacher and one has to have love for the knowledge. So love is required in all three. Without knowledge, you will not get love. Without love, you will not get knowledge. You will not get the physical abilities and you will not even be able to serve. But they say that through bhakti, through devotion, you get all three. You get the benefits of karma, yoga service. You get the benefit of Ashtang yoga or the meditation, and even knowledge. How is that? So it says here in the verse number 15, Brahmat mai katva vijnanat, knowing the oneness of Brahman and I, Muktim Prahur Manishin. The wise people say that once you understand your oneness with the Lord, then you are free from the bondages of the world. Etat Sarvam Tu Bhakti Praptam. All these three can be obtained through the path of the devotion. Not only that, but even more than that. Even go beyond all three. So bhakti not only gives you all the three paths, but even gives you more. So how does he do that? Let us see briefly. You say, how does it give me purity of mind? Okay, through service, I'm getting purity of mind. But through loving God, how do I get purity of mind? I know, of course, this my mind is very beautiful and very sweet and very loving. Well, that is purity of mind. When your mind is filled with divine thoughts, then automatically there is no anger, there is no jealousy, there is no greed, there is no hatred. When you sit in a church or a temple and when you are thinking about the Lord and singing the hymns and singing the songs and chanting the mantras, your mind immediately becomes purified. Because the thought of, that's what they say, that the Lord is all love and compassion. And when you turn your mind towards Him, your mind automatically becomes full of love, compassion. There is no anger, there is no hatred. Not only that, but a person who truly loves God, then he automatically sees the whole world as that my beloved Lord who has created me and loves me has created this whole universe. Every being, he spontaneously loves everybody, all animals, all birds, all plants, all humans. Why? Because they are all His creation. I am. And so there is a spontaneous love, there is spontaneous service. A true devotee of the Lord cannot hate anyone. You cannot say, I love God and then I hate this person. Even if he doesn't belong to my faith, doesn't belong to my church, doesn't belong to my religion, doesn't worship in the same building as I do, doesn't matter. There is one Lord who has different names. You can call him Allah, you can call him Jesus, you can call him Buddha, Father in Heaven. Whether you worship in a church or a temple or a mosque, whether you read the Gita or the Bible or the Quran, it doesn't matter. That is a spontaneous love. And so his mind automatically becomes pure, becomes loving. Then there cannot be anger, there cannot be hatred, there cannot be jealousy in a person who truly loves God. Okay, how does he get cessation of thoughts? How can I, through love, get cessation of thoughts? To think about it, when your mind is deep in, you know, suppose you're listening to some beautiful hymns, or you're sitting in the church or temple and then the beautiful music is playing, or you're sitting alone in your room and you're playing some beautiful music, you know, divine music, then slowly you'll find that your mind becomes very quiet, very still, and ultimately there is no thought but Lord alone, Him and Him alone, or her, you know, if you're worshipping the Divine Mother. So that complete stillness of the mind comes, and you might have yourself experienced, whether it, not only in meditation, but when you're, it's not only for God, but say you are sitting and writing a poetry or listening to some beautiful poetry, or an artist is painting, and she will find that when she is painting, her mind is so full of devotion for that art, for her skill, that there is no other thought except that painting, and she gets lost in that. So when a mind is totally centered in one thing, and a scientist, you know, sitting in his laboratory and thinking about some different difficult project, or a author writing a novel or a poetry, when their mind is totally centered in that one, then there is nothing else, total cessation. So when a devotee, for him or her, the Lord is the absolute, and that is the total love he has, and for him there is nothing else. And so when that happens, then that person goes into Nirvikalpa Samadhi, where there is no experiencer, no experience, Lord alone is. And that silence comes. Not only that, but a lot of powers outcome to such an individual. You say, well, you know, does he do it for powers? No, he does not do it for powers. But powers come spontaneously. As you can see, Jesus' life, you know, he could perform so many miracles. He did not go out to seek miracles. He wasn't doing miracles to impress somebody. But when he saw somebody suffering, spontaneously they flowed out of him. There is a very beautiful story. It's a little long today, but, you know, we had to cover two verses, so I may go a little over. So there's this beautiful story. There was this yogi who had a lot of powers. You know, he had great spiritual powers. And then there was a devotee who just loved the Lord and sang his glories. And so these two of them were one time going on a pilgrimage together. They said, let's go to some holy place. And in those days, you know, this was in India many hundred years ago, you had to walk, you know, or you had to take a bullock cart. And they couldn't afford a bullock cart, so they were walking. And it so happened that they were walking through a desert area, and they had to walk many, many miles, and their water ran out. It was hot, July like it is, late afternoon. They had no water, and they were thirsty, and they were almost dying with lack of water. And so they came to an abandoned village, where there used to be a village, but people had abandoned it because there was no water in that area. So they said, you know, in this village, I don't, there's nobody here. And then they happened to find an old broken well with the bricks, you know, falling apart. So they said, let's see, maybe there is some water in the well. And they peeped in there. And just recently, there had been a rainfall, just 1 or 2 inches. And so at the bottom of the well, there was this much water, way in the bottom, you know, 60 feet deep. How are they to get it? There's no bucket, there is no rope, there is nothing. This is a true story. So the yogi said, you know, I have with my yogic powers, I can go. So he dove in there, you know, in this one tree. He dove from the top, landed safely, you know, and he drank the water, and with his power, he climbed up the bricks and came up. And he said, see, you need to practice yoga. I keep telling you, you know, if without yoga, you'll die of thirst today. He said, if my Lord wants me to die of thirst, the devotee says, I will. I don't mind. So he just sits there and starts chanting the name of the Lord. And miraculously, a spring opened in the bottom. And that well started filling, and came right to the top. Right to the brim, it filled up. And the devotee said, see, my Lord did that. So he just, you know, drinks water, washes himself, and they go on. So the devotee who loves Lord is not seeking powers, but when he becomes one with the Lord, then the Lord works through him. And then spontaneously, you know, the whole world is there to serve him. And he serves the world, and the whole world serves him. So this can be gained by devotion. And how about oneness with God? Well, the God alone himself reveals. When you devote your attention totally to that Lord, and you're thinking of God and God alone, and he alone is there, everything in this universe is him, and I am just a helpless, I'm an ordinary servant. I'm a servant in his world. He has placed me here to do his work. He has absolutely no ego, no, like Jesus said, the Father in heaven and I are one. So that oneness comes when there is this attitude of love and devotion. And then there is nothing else but God and God alone. So his every action becomes, you know, then you see God in that individual. When that saint, currently we have a saintly person here staying with us, Swami Sharanandaji, he is doing the children's camp. And when you sit in front of him, he's such a symbol of love and devotion and compassion. He's such a sweet person. You feel that divinity is just pouring out of him. And so that is the glory of this divine individuals, because the Lord himself reveals himself to him. He doesn't have to go out and search for God and say, where is God and how do I find him? He doesn't have to sit and meditate and do all the yogas. He just loves God, does God's work without ego. And as we had studied last week, the God himself appears in his heart and does all his work for him. So whatever he is required to be done, whatever services has to be done, whatever, if he has started an institution, the Lord says, I take care of that. If he is by himself working for the benefit of mankind, he himself provides that. and such an individual becomes a great source of inspiration to millions. Buddha lived, you know, 2,500 years ago and traveled through a few villages. You know, he was walking on foot, and maybe 500,000, 5,000, 10,000 people he may have reached in his travels. But look at it. Today we have more than a billion Buddhists. Why? Because Buddha had no ego, no I or mine. He became an instrument of service. Look at Christ. You know, he preached his sermon to 10 people, you know, and or a few people on the mount. And today, billions of Christians all over read his Bible and worship him, and there are churches and all. So these people, just through service of God, just through devotion, they attain all three. The founder of our mission, Swami Chinmayananda, in his lifetime, he had founded so many missions, but since he left his body in 1993, the mission has tripled. There's more than 300 centers like these throughout the world where such classes are going on. And a lot of them are bigger. You know, ours is one of the smaller ones. The ones in Houston and all, they have 1,000 children who study in LA, in San Jose, in Hong Kong, Singapore, Africa, all over the world. There are mission centers like these. So a true devotee of the Lord, then the Lord says, I take care of his job. I do his work for him. So that is the beauty of this path of love, that you not only get the benefit of service, you not only get the benefit of yoga, not only you get the knowledge, but you get a lot more. And what more? That we'll talk next week. What more do we get? Yes, that is to be done next week. But today this much is good, because it basically in half an hour I tried to cover all the four paths. How through the four paths we can reach God. You can reach him through service. You can reach him through the path of yoga and meditation. You can reach him through the path of knowledge. Or you can reach him through the path of love. We are not putting those three down. We are not saying that they are anyway inferior to love. Each one of those paths can take us to the highest. But they have to be done with full dedication and have to be done with love. Through service, like Mahatma Gandhi, you see his life, or Martin Luther King, the life was service for God. Then there are great yogis, you know, who through their meditation dissolved their mind and became one with that. And of course, great scholars like Swami Chinmayananda and Shankaracharya, and great scholars who gave us this knowledge, also reached the highest. And then there are, of course, devotees like Mother Teresa, Saint Francis, so many great saints in India, you know, Tukaram, Narasimha Mehta, and all Mirabai, all those great saints, through love they reached. So the point is that any of these paths, when it is done with love and devotion, will take you to the highest. So, but because this is a book of love, so love has been emphasized. But in a book of Karma Yoga like the Gita, you find they have emphasized the path of service. And there are other books like Patanjali's Ashtang Yoga, you know, Patanjali Sutras, they talk about the path of yoga. And then the, you know, the Upanishads and all, they talk about the path of knowledge. So any of those four paths, when done with the right attitude, will take you to the highest. So that is the essence of this talk today. It's very, very beautiful. There's a lot of matter we had to cover. I hope I was able to do justice to this. Yes. It's a little long story, but I can tell. My dad actually built a hospital for cancer patients. He was running a small cancer center, detection center, and in the whole of North India, which is 200 million people, which is the whole population of the U.S., they did not have a cancer hospital in those days. People had to go to Bombay. And so he started to build a cancer hospital. He had no money. He just had 2 acres of land, and he started construction. And people used to tell him, you're a fool. You know, you have no money. You have no experience. You never built a hospital. He was an executive, you know. He retired from Siemens. He said, no, my country needs a hospital. I'm going to build it. And so he got a loan from a bank. Then he went to Siemens and got equipment. But he was all the time short of money. And one time, the construction stopped because there was no steel. He had no money, you know. the bank had not yet given him the full loan or whatever the situation was, but he had no money, and the contractor said, if I do not get 2 tons of steel tomorrow, I have to stop construction. And 2 tons is a lot, you know, like 9,000, 10,000 pounds of steel. And that costs, you know, a few lakh of rupees, maybe, you know, a few $100,000. And he didn't have the money. He said, I don't have it. So he said, well, sorry, you know, the building, all the labor is there, but we're going to stop construction. I need it by tomorrow. So he didn't know what to do. So he was walking. He had gone to one of the embassies, you know, to talk up to the German embassy to get the equipment. They were going to help him get the equipment from Germany. And so he walks out of the embassy. This is a true story. He walks out and a car stops next to him. And a Sardarji comes out, you know, the one with the beard, the turban, Singh. And he gets out of the car and he tells him, are you K.K. Mehta? And he said, yeah, I'm K.K. Mehta. How do you know me? He said, never mind, I know you. He said, oh. He had never seen that gentleman. He didn't know who he was. And he knew his name. And then the Sardarji says, are you building a hospital? He said, yeah, I'm building a hospital. How did you know that? Never mind, I know. You're building a hospital. He says, yeah. Are you building a cancer hospital? Yeah, yeah. How do you know all that? He said, do you need some steel? He says, yeah, I need steel, but who told you that? He said, never mind. How much steel do you need? He said, well, I need 2.5 tons. You know, it's about 10,000 pounds of steel I need. He said, okay, here's my card. Come tomorrow to my warehouse. I have the steel. You can pick it up. He said, but money, I don't have payment. Don't worry about payment. Just take it. And he gave him his card, drove off, and disappeared. And then my father sent the contractor with the card. And they said, yes, this gentleman had called. And here's 2 tons of steel. It was just lying in his godown, in his factory, unused. He said, you can have it. So, I mean, you know, when you're doing his work unselfishly, how he appears and what he does, it's impossible. And this story you cannot believe, but it actually happened to him. And he, then not only that, but the hospital was built. And today it's a 500-bed, one of the top cancer institutions, not only in India, but in Asia. It is known as one of the best hospitals. They have the state-of-the-art equipment, very successful. They have seminars where speakers from all over the world come. Radiation, chemotherapy, the robot, you know, robotic surgery, everything they have. So when you are doing his work unselfishly, you know, dedicated to the Lord, then he appears mysteriously. And how he appears and what he does, it's remarkable. It's really wonderful. This story, actually, I didn't want to repeat it, but she told me. And he himself was amazed. He said, how he does, you know, how the Lord works, through whom, you know, he himself doesn't come, but he chooses the right kind of instruments to do his work.